Hey, friends. Quick update. Anyway, we have a bit of a situation today. I'm currently traveling and forgot my microphone adapter. Instead of leaving you without an episode, Rachel and I decided to release our most recent unfiltered episode to everyone on the public feed. This is normally exclusive content only our paying supporters get to enjoy. So consider this your chance to experience what you've been missing. If you like what you hear, we're offering a special OOPS discount, 30% off annual subscriptions using code OOPS at checkout. As a paying supporter, you'll get ad-free episodes twice weekly, exclusive chats, monthly unfiltered episodes like this one, and our upcoming Friday night live events with supporter-only chat. For the full ad-free experience, download the Substack app to listen just like our paying supporters do. We'll be back Thursday with our regular episode, and yes, I'll definitely have my adapter by then. Thanks to all our current paying supporters, you're what makes this show possible. Now let's get into today's unfiltered conversation. By the way, if I sound weird, you aren't crazy. This is an AI-generated voice because, well, microphone adapter issues. Anyway, let's get into today's unfiltered conversation.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion
or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
He sits at the counter and he eats his breakfast while holding his little chihuahua with one arm, feeding the chihuahua little bits of pancake or waffle.
Oh, my gosh. I need a giant hat immediately. Are you going today? Go today.
No.
Go today to Waffle House. Take a picture, and then I need to know the dog's name. You have to just go up one day and be like, I gotta know the dog's name.
You want me to talk to a stranger?
Yes. He's bringing a chihuahua to share pancakes with. I'm sure he's nice. Like, just...
Welcome to Unfiltered, the exclusive Rivera and Reeves episodes where the gloves come off, the filters are gone, and we're not holding back.
In these episodes, we're diving deeper, saying the things we can't or won't say on the free feed, and delivering the raw, unpolished truth you've come to expect from us.
This is where we really dig into the stories that matter, call out the absurdity without any interruptions, and maybe even spill some behind-the-scenes tea. We're here because you're not afraid of a little controversy and a lot of sarcasm.
So grab your coffee, your bourbon, or both. This is Unfiltered. No spin, no fluff, just straight-up truth from your favorite news skeptics.
Hey, friends, and welcome to an episode of Unfiltered. I am Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. It is early in the morning, but we got stuff to get done. So say hello, Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
She's got pandas to go see. She's going to go see some pandas.
I do. I'm going to the zoo today with my zoo. I'm taking my wild beasts to see the wild beasts. They're so excited, though. Like, they all have their own animal that they cannot wait to see. Like, my eldest really wants to see a bearded monkey. That was her favorite last time we went.
Oh, cool.
I know. And then my other child really wants to see the pandas, which are back. But I did tell them there's a line. Like, I know there's going to be a
line. I saw the pandas like a million years ago when I lived in D.C. Like,
yeah.
I would say,
yeah,
what
they,
was that?
They like 20,
very excited. Like 23 years ago, I think is when I saw the pandas or something like that. So I guess not a million years, literally. But, you know, that feels like it.
It feels like it.
We're gardening today.
It's supposed to rain all day today, too.
Oh, fun times. We're doing the garden today. We're planting some things and getting ready for the season. We're going to have a plethora of corn this year. At least that's the hope. So
are you not getting rain today at all? Is there no weather?
We had it yesterday. I think we're going to be doing the gardening like first thing in the morning. And so we should be OK. And it'll
nice.
Like the rain's coming later in the day. So it'll be fine. But
nice.
For those of you who are listening, this is an unfiltered episode of Miss of Rivera and Reeves.
That means you're going to hear all of that because we don't edit these.
They're literally just popped out. So if you're unfamiliar with what Unfiltered is, it is our bonus episode for our paying subscribers. However, we do release a preview to our free subscribers. So if you're listening to this and you are not a paying supporter, it's going to end in 15 minutes and you're going to be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry for that.
Because we are, I mean, look at all the interesting stuff we've already talked about. Bearded monkeys and gardening plans. Riveting.
Today, what are we going to talk about today? Half the time, so this is usually how the format goes here, in case you're unfamiliar. It is unedited. There's no clip-ins, unfiltered. And we have like a general topic and we kind of just go with it and see what happens. So today's general topic is an interesting. So like as I was looking for stuff to talk about on the regular episode, this report popped into on my radar or whatever you want to talk about it or address it from the NCRI, which is the network of. What is that?
Contagion.
Oh my gosh. I cannot Contagion. See. I still have mascara and stuff in my eyeballs. Everything's blurry. Okay. Network of Contagion Research Institute and with Rutgers University. Okay. So, and this survey found that 55% of self-identified leftists in the survey said that killing Trump is at least somewhat justifiable. And that 48% are saying the same about Elon Musk. And I...
That's alarming. That is alarming.
Well, I just found that... I don't know. So I was like, I want to talk
alarming.
About this. Yeah. Alarming, fascinating. It's also like, makes me think about why has this become acceptable? What is going on that's making it acceptable? I mean, I think it's definitely part of the fact that we've become... so divided, you know what I mean, as a country, and then like you can end up in a bubble of information. Do you know what I mean? Like, so like if you're someone who is
like very one-sided,
yes, very one-sided, very volatile information. So if you're like mainly consuming people that are telling you how horrible these two people are, how they're just out to essentially murder people by proxy. You know what I mean? By cutting off their welfare or health. I'm sorry, their health care.
Yeah, stealing their medication, stealing their money and giving it all to the rich. Yeah,
exactly. It just kind of makes it kind of wild that this is even that people. What's wild to me, too, is that people are answering the survey and saying like, yeah, I think that could be justifiable.
Yeah. Like it's like there's this normal part of them that's like, sure, I'll answer a survey. Why not? So I there's mean, this very normal part of like, you know, being human, being an adult. We answer surveys sometimes. We do this extra 5 minutes at the end of a phone call with, you know, your doctor's office or the hospital. And so they actually sat down and had to think through their answer. And
they were like, yeah, sure.
I'm curious. I'm curious if it was like on an actual phone call with someone or if they had to write it on a piece of paper, because that's even more awkward if you're on a phone call with someone and you're like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how acceptable do you think it is to assassinate our current president? And they're like, well, I'm going to give that a 9.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that
that's what I want to know.
On top of all that, the fact is that this is a president who's there's been 2 attempted assassinations on him. There was one just recently. I was literally just watching an update that a man apparently, which we hadn't heard about. I hadn't heard about it. I don't know about you. Was arrested because of intentions of wanting to assassinate or making plans to assassinate the president. There was also like a small plane, I think, that was escorted out of concerns because it was like flying close over Mar-a-Lago. I don't know. And what's interesting is I read an article from the Federalist and they pointed out that it seems as if though like we're developing a type of assassination culture. Because I remember thinking even when Trump was first like the first attempted assassination happened, one of the things that you saw pretty regularly or, you know, surprisingly, were people posting on social media how they're like, man, that's disappointing. Why?
Yeah.
He survived.
Well, and thinking that it was, it's hard enough for me to understand people having those thoughts in their heads, but we know that they do. But then to just be so brazen about it, and know that it's going to be agreed with by enough people that you would post it on social media. They have to know that there was one gal who has a lefty podcast with some other friends of hers called Red, Wine, and Blue. That's, okay. that's actually a pretty big, her name's Rachel Vindman. And her husband is.
Why is Rachel Vindman sound? Like, wait, isn't Rachel Vindman?
Because her husband.
She was.
Her husband.
Testified against. Or like was. Yes, okay. Yes. I was like, why is Vindman sound yeah. so.
So she has a pretty solid following on her podcast. And I remember when the Butler rally happened. Almost immediately
That's
afterwards.
Right, she did.
We did something like, oh, calm down, everyone. It was just his ear. Or something really callous. I mean, very quickly afterwards. And I just, that was the first one of many I saw from people who were like, did he even really get shot? Or was she
there was
a couple
like the speculation.
Another direction. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's one thing to think those things. It's another to post them and feel proud that you feel that way. I don't know. It's a bizarre phenomenon. That's for sure.
I just pulled up the study to kind of look a little bit more into it. Cause you know, like sometimes mm-hmm. these numbers are fine. Like I just wanted to see the actual numbers. So this is justification for murder of Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Right. It says that of all respondents, 31.6% said it was justifiable.
And these were all
for Elon Musk
leftists.
No. So that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm pulling this up. So it says percentage said partially justified or more, right? And so for Elon Musk, it says all respondents, 31.6%. For respondents that self-identified left of center, it was 48.6%.
Wow.
Yeah, for the percentage that for Trump, it said all respondents was 38.5%, and those who identified left of center to find violence at least somewhat justifiable was 55.2%. And then this is the other one. The percentage who say destroying Tesla dealerships is partially acceptable. All respondents, 39, your mouth is like gaping open. All respondents, 39.8%. And then left of center, 57.6%.
That's and crazy.
I just want to point out that this isn't like, this study isn't, I don't know, the Heritage Foundation that's doing this study. Yeah. This is in partnership with Rutgers University. So this isn't exactly like, you know, this is, I would argue, a left-leaning institution. Now, that could be part of, like, the pool that they're sampling from. Do you know what I mean? So, like, if you're doing all respondents, like, maybe the pool that you're sampling from is more left, even though they don't self-identify as left of center. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I think it's kind of disturbing. Well,
the point is, like, I don't care if you're right of center, left of center, way left of center.
Well, no, you shouldn't be, like...
I feel like it should just not be acceptable to
not be acceptable. It's not okay. I'm just like not providing the context of the overall, like,
how many respondents were there in the whole survey? Does it say?
Let me see. I can. Oh, hold on. Let me ask. Let me see if I can find it real quick. But let me see. Nearly 40% of the survey links the views. Okay, so this I thought was really interesting while I look up and to answer your question. The survey linked these views to the are you familiar with Blue Sky, which I've mentioned in the past. So if you guys don't know what
Blue
Sky is.
I mean, I've never been on it, but
what was your question again about the survey? How many
respondents were there in the whole survey?
Were there in this survey?
And Blue Sky, for those of you who don't know, it's just it's like leftist Twitter.
It literally
basically.
Is.
So it's a safe space for people who feel like Elon Musk makes them, you know, their tummy hurt. That's what Blue Sky is.
You know what's hilarious? Oh, my gosh. Now that you're mentioning it and Blue Sky came up, I wish I could remember. I don't know if it was like the New Yorker or the Atlantic or it was, you know, a left-leaning publication. But they had recently done a profile on the founder of Blue Sky. And like the talking point of this article was that blue sky is supposed to be like the nicer, safer, how this person is trying to create a more accepting kind of,
I mean,
like,
except for that, like, all the people that are on there may have been in this survey and they all want to, they all think it's justifiable.
To respond to your question, the survey had 1,264 respondents after the data cleaned and weighing adjustments. So that is, it's not a small, I mean, most surveys, a decent survey, you want to get it over 1,000. So it's not small. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's about half of them that think it's totally fine to blow up Tesla dealerships and about 40% of them that think it's okay to commit acts of violence on the president and Elon Musk.
Which, think about that.
That's our takeaway here.
That's,
yeah, it's, that's, I'm sorry, this is wild. But you know what? Like, again, we talked about this leading up to the election. We talked about it afterwards because some of the media is just not taking a hint. They cannot drop old tropes and narratives. But I mean, you tell people that Trump is Hitler for a decade, I mean, they're going to start to believe you eventually.
Honestly, I can't. This
what
is
do you expect?
Thing. We have had ages, like my entire lifetime, that I can think of people talking about, like, the speculation of, like, if Hitler had ever, like, never existed. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Or conversations.
Or if you could go back in time and kill Hitler.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, now all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, you can't be surprised that when you make so many comparisons towards literally the worst person in the 20th century, you know what I mean? Like, in modern times, or quasi, you know, quote, modern times, that people are like, yeah, I think it's justifiable, because to murder the president of the United States, or Elon Musk, who's his assistant, or honestly,
I'm saving humanity.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of how they see it. It's that ends justify the means mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't be surprised. And then on top of that, you have, like, let's just talk about Elon Musk and Tulsa and Tulsa. I'm sorry, Tulsa, not Tulsa. I love Tulsa. I lived in Tulsa for a while. Tesla, where you have, like, you have these Congress persons, people that are being asked, you know, do you not think that maybe some of your rhetoric has contributed to the rise in attacks on, and AOC is like, well, the Republicans call me a communist. Have you seen that clip of her being chased around? So she's being chased around in the halls of Congress, or, like, I think I've seen two. One where she's somewhere in the Capitol and one where she's, like, outside. Mm-hmm. And both times.
Yeah, I saw the outside one.
Yeah. And I think it might be either a reporter from Fox or the Daily Caller. I can't remember which one. But they're asking her about, you know, do you think that the divisive language that has come out from the Democrats, and it's not even the divisive language, like, you can criticize the administration, you can criticize what Elon Musk is doing, but none of them have been like, hey, you shouldn't be firebombing and you shouldn't be shooting into Tesla dealerships. You shouldn't be keying the cars of Tesla owners. You even had Kelly, who's supposed to be, like, the most, like, I would say a centrist type Democrat.
Are you talking about Mark Kelly?
Yeah. Where he hasn't spoken off, like, against it. And then he went and, you know, he did this whole performative thing where he got rid of his Tesla and got, like, some kind of Chevy Yukon Tahoe or something like that, like some giant gas guzzling, which I thought was hilarious. Like, you go and you trade your EV vehicle for a giant gas guzzling.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, dude, give me a break. But my point being is that even he's, like, sending out a signal, maybe not as aggressively, you know, that Tesla's trash, that Elon is trash.
Yeah.
He is probably definitely more center. You know what I mean? And it's happening during a time where all of this other stuff is happening. And then when this reporter goes and asks AOC about, you know, do you think that maybe your rhetoric should be, I don't know, toned down a little bit? Her response is basically like, well, the Republicans call me a communist all the time. I'm like,
I mean, so, like, yeah, some of us do, because you're kind of communist.
You're a little communist-y, you know what I mean? But nobody's like...
But, like, the whole point is, I think there's a part of, this is kind of a little bit separate, but I was the whole, like, I'm going to have my Tesla towed away performative, you know, show that lots of these Democrats are putting on.
Yeah.
I think
after
some
they've
of it
already
is
bought them.
Well, they just feel like all this guilt, like they can't think freely. Like, I can like my car, and that doesn't mean that I love the presidency, you know, but they can't have fluid thoughts. It's like the critical thinking muscle is so atrophied that they can't separate the two. And so they feel this like tremendous like emptiness and guilt for owning a Tesla.
It's kind of anything that's like thing. Contributing to dangers.
I know.
And it view as a danger and a downfall and a existential crisis. And it's also what you're seeing like within families or within friendships where they're like, you know, people that are leaning left are separating themselves.
Like, I can't even talk to you anymore.
Yeah, I can't even talk to you anymore. I can't even speak with you anymore.
It's like it's a reminder of, like, we've had that happen where it's almost like they have to cut. It's like a surgical move. They have to cut things out of their life completely instead of learning to just, like, live in the awkward middle where you have to learn to train yourself to, like, speak with people who disagree with you or be uncomfortable with having someone challenge your beliefs.
Well, and I think it's also because any and all of this, it's because they feel like they are supporting something that is an existential crisis because they've gotten to that mindset. Yes. Do you know what I mean? So because
They've been told it. They've been told it by politicians, by comedians, by Hollywood, by historians, by all kinds of people that just the worst possible thing that could happen to America is Donald Trump. And then it happened to America. And these people are legit. I mean, I think that they actually think that he is as dangerous as they've been told, which is, and then these are the types of things that can start to happen. I think what else can't be missed, though, is that we live in a culture that totally dehumanizes humanity. I mean, think about how often we're discussing matters of life and death as a choice. Like,
up in Canada and stuff like that?
Like abortion?
And,
but that's here too in our country. Like, you don't want to be pregnant, abort the baby. The child has some kind of congenital defect or a possible challenge, physical abnormality, you can abort the baby. You get towards the end. I mean, you have people who are saying they're depressed, so maybe legalizing euthanasia should be as ubiquitous here in America as it is in Canada. We have those kinds of discussions. If you don't like someone in your family, you can just choose not to talk to them anymore. And we talk about death. We tell people that they can stop being who they actually are biologically and totally change to a different gender. Or, you know, if you don't like, there's all these articles coming out now how, you know, not having kids was the best thing we ever chose. Or I'm divorcing my husband because it wasn't the fulfilling life I had thought. So we have a very bizarrely backwards.
Yeah.
Yes. Anti-human type. I mean, look at that Netflix. I wrote a whole piece on this, that Netflix show, the one about never dying. We have movements of people who think they're never going to die because they're going to overcome biology with science. We have a very warped view of life, death. And when we have that warped view of life and death, and we're constantly, you know, reevaluating the sanctity of life, the importance of it, if it matters, if it doesn't, where we go after we die, we're so confused that it starts to not become a huge deal devaluing someone's life if you don't like them, if you don't agree with them. I mean, look at all the people who thought and still think and are contributing to a GoFundMe for Luigi Mangione. And
yeah, I was going to mention that too.
Walked up in the street and shot a guy in the back of the head. And people were like, well,
he, you
on
know,
a scale
he was
of
a
one
horrible...
to 10, I'm going to have to give that a 10. Yeah.
Well, and I mean
it's all backwards.
We can't miss that this is escalated over a pretty long span of time, but it's escalated along with the downfall or like pulling away from institutions like, you know, the church and just, you know,
yes,
faith. I mean, obviously, I believe, I think pulling away from God in general and pulling away and then filling that hole with essentially here in the United States. Yeah. Exactly. In the U.S.
It's politics.
It's
or
politics. It's a social issue. It's something else yeah. that gives you some kind of identity, some kind of meaning. And because mm-hmm. without that, like you're just you're essentially in an existential crisis because you don't have anything yep. outside of yourself, you know? Exactly. And I think that's probably, I would say that's the main contributor of that, especially when you don't, like us as human beings are imperfect. And because of our, of being mm-hmm. imperfect, when we are left to our own devices to just make up rules based mainly on our feelings, your rules mm-hmm. are destabilizing. They're, you can't trust them.
Yeah, it's a really bad... Yeah, you cannot. It's like these people who are always like, follow your heart.
I'm no. like, no.
I'm like, that is a horrible idea. Please don't do that. Don't have, and as a Christian, like I've always told my girls that. I'm like, you need to get in control of your emotions. Otherwise, they'll control you. And that is just bad for everybody. But I mean, primarily you. But it's a horrible idea. You don't, as a Christian, we don't follow our hearts. We follow the Holy Spirit, which often is in direct contradiction to my heart and what I want
like,
to
no,
do.
Lord, and, I do not want to do that. Don't we?
But instead, like we have people who feel, like you said, when we detached God from, when we became this post-Christian nation and we detached God, so something else becomes our God, obviously. And for many people, it's the idea of some kind of movement, especially for Democrats, I think because like we talked about on the last podcast, there's so many movements within their movement mm-hmm. that it just kind of becomes this kind of activist ethos that they have to kind of swim in where they're just pro everything, but then anti anything establishment or Republican. Right. And so when it becomes a movement and it becomes your God, you'll do anything. And so that's why you see people who justify the BLM riots. You see people who will justify someone like a lot of people, actually, Luigi Mangione and things like that, because it's pushing forward a movement, a ideology, a, you know, their sense of what's altruistic and what has to happen in this world. And, you know, whatever happens, it's like you said, the end, where they want to go, it justifies all of these things that they'll allow, even though they know that they're wrong.
Well, and what's fascinating,
it's for the sake of the party.
Yeah. All of the things that they'll tend to cite to is like, you know, for example, Trump being Hitler or, you know, even when you talk about the Israel-Gaza conflict and, you know, everything is like, they'll make these... Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. Excuse me. They'll make these historical comparisons of, you know, concentration camps or detention camps or gulags or disappearing people, arrests, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yet many of those tools are the tools that we actually have seen historically that supported socialist / communist governments. You know what I mean?
Like enterprises. Yeah.
Enterprises. That's typically what you saw. And it's, you know, frankly, I just find it interesting that there just seems to be like this. Because ultimately, like if you were to put the most likely conclusion that would happen is that if very progressive left of center individuals were to gain power. And I think you can get this on the extremes of both sides, but mm-hmm. it is definitely much more ubiquitous or much more of a concern when it's the left, because I would say that the most fringe on the left is bigger than the most fringe on the right here in the United States, meaning that mm-hmm. the threat of what could ultimately happen is more significant if mm-hmm. someone on the most left-leaning progressive end of the spectrum were to gain power versus mm-hmm. I don't even see anyone on the most right, you know, authoritarian end of the spectrum gaining power in the United States. Like, I just don't see that there's enough support for that for it to happen. And because of that, I would definitely consider that this is much more of a concern, especially considering, like, we win a Democrat, like, for the last 4 years when Biden was in office, you didn't see anybody attacking, like, Democrat politicians. You didn't see anyone. Now, we protested institutions that were, I don't know, using racist, you know, and divisive policies of DEI, you know, to demonize half of the country. But that was, I mean, that's a movement. Do you know what I mean? That's actual protest. That's actual politics. That's just a boycott. What is happening with Tesla is not a boycott. It is terrorism. You're keying people's cars. Yeah. You're cutting people off. You're bombing or attacking Tesla dealerships. Now you have two attempted assassinations on a president. A man was literally shot in the streets on his way to a shareholders meeting in the back of the head with, you know, a family. And people are celebrating this because of some perception that, you know, healthcare should be a universal right to everyone, and anyone who is profiting off of healthcare, which barely has a profit margin. And honestly, what we could discuss more is the fact that the Democrats or the Democrat Party doesn't allow or create so many, what do you call it, like, barriers in order for healthcare to be a actual free trade enterprise. With all their regulations and everything, like, it just blows my mind that they talk about all of the, like, the possible detrimental or the worst case scenario that's going to happen with Trump. And that's not even to say that his administration so far since he's been in office hasn't made mistakes and hasn't been problematic. And there aren't things that you can't criticize and you can't question. But to the point where they're, like, making it seem like there's going to be detention centers, people are going to be disappeared. Yeah. You're going to be, like, losing all your rights. Women, apparently, for a long time, we were supposed to be, like, back. I was like, why aren't we all back in, like, the kitchen with no jobs and no credit cards?
I was told that all my rights were going to disappear on January 21. And so far, so good. Doing all right.
Like, you don't see all of this, you know.
No.
Behavior when a Democrat is in office and when the Democrat Party has control. You only see it when a Republican has control.
When we have these conversations. Yeah. And when we have these kind of conversations, or other people try to have them, you know, with Democrats out in the wild, it is so clear that the Democrat Party, their base, is much more prone to violence.
Yes.
Than the right is, because the only thing that they can ever cite that the right has done that has exhibited force or violence is January 6th.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the only thing that they can point out. Otherwise, it's like, no. I mean, there's so few incidences of the right trying to advance their views and their movement through force and death and rioting and destruction.
Or punching people randomly in the face when they don't like what they're saying.
Right. There's so few examples on the right. And this is just fact. It's not me wishful thinking, you know, because I happen to be a Republican. And like you said, that's scary. And it should be evaluated, because what happens, everybody always asks us, would there be a civil war? Could we come to a, could that happen again? And for a lot of reasons, I think no, it can't happen again. Yeah. Not in the way we're kind of thinking of it happening. But I'll tell you what will incite some actual violence, or could potentially.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
As if one of these wackadoodles ends up, something ends up happening to the president or to Elon Musk, that is going to be, I fear for what happens if people who took, respondents who took that survey, who were like, yeah, I think it's justified. Those people are out and about in our world. We're working with them. We are going to the supermarket. We are driving on the freeway next to them. And they think that it's justifiable for someone to either do violence against Donald Trump or kill him. Well, they're going to raise children. They're talking with other humans. They're sharing that idea out there in the world. And my fear is something's going to happen. I mean, something already has happened. There's been assassination attempts against him. What happens when one succeeds? And what happens to the nation then? You know what I mean? I fear for that. And I just don't feel that on the right. That's not how we naturally deal with
conflict.
You know, not liking the candidate or not liking the president. I didn't like Biden at all. I thought he was horrible.
Well, not only was he horrible, but
he was horrible.
I considered him, like what he did during his administration, I considered to be incredibly anti-liberty, you know what I mean? Like anti-freedom. And, you know, he was using the FBI to investigate his own citizens. He was, and not even like, I'm talking about like freaking mothers and, you know, fathers who were just concerned about, you know, they were attending school, what do you call them? School meetings or whatever. I forget
school
what they're called.
School board meetings.
Thank you. Yeah, school board meetings. Christians and Catholics who were praying and protesting outside of abortion clinics. Like, there, what is insane is that the resources were being used against American citizens for their
and
own,
yet
no, mainly
none
religious
of us
liberties.
Were like, hey, yes, and none of us were like, let me take a survey so I can tell you that I kind of think political violence is okay against him. No. Because that is unacceptable and horrible. And yet, and not just like one or two people thinking that. Like, this survey is highlighting, you know, a pretty, even if there was only 600 people in the whole world or in the whole country who thinks that violence against the president is justifiable, still not great. But this is just a little teeny sampling of our country. And if Twitter is a reflection of people's hearts and minds, which I think it is because people are in a, you know, in their living room, just clickety clacking their crazy, crazy opinions. And I see stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, so make assassination great again, stuff like that. It's scary. And, you know, I just don't see that on the right. I don't think people can pinpoint examples.
I can definitely say that there's some fringe voices on the right that are just like there are on the left.
Voices.
But I just don't see anybody's going
out there. I just don't remember. I don't remember, you know, I follow plenty of right and left crazy people because I like to keep a pulse on it. And I don't remember the last 4 years when Joe Biden was, I mean, really just being, some might even say, a dangerous president in you know, lots of his policies. I didn't see any of this, like, talk about committing acts of violence against him. I just didn't.
No.
We didn't. We don't talk like that. We use ideas. Like, I don't know. I could be in a total silo, but I don't think I am.
Well, and I think, well, honestly, I just think the evidence of action is what confirms that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? During the 4 years that Biden was in office, Oh, my husband and I are literally making jokes that the summer's approaching and that we're just kind of like waiting
for something to happen.
For something
it's
to happen.
Warm up.
And then the Democrats are going to have some kind of riot or some kind of protest or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just waiting for it.
A bunch of people said that yesterday when the judge decided that Mahmoud Khalil could be deported.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of messages. People were like, okay, you know, it's we're ramping up to Holy Week and it's getting warm outside, so cue the protests. You know, is this what's going to set people off? Because we just anticipate it. It's just expected.
You don't expect that. I did not expect that. And that wasn't even, that's not just me. Like, it just didn't happen. The fact that it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it, so I don't know. And I think it's really interesting too, considering that and this is just to kind of wrap things up. It was a thought that popped into my head is that the Democrats and the left for a long time, there's, you know, always been this kind of talking point. And I mean, obviously from the right, too, that, you know, that violence is never justifiable. You know what I mean? Like a violent, and you would hear Biden say that too, just kind of like tossing mm-hmm. it, you know, as a favor. You know, violence is never justifiable. But then they go, but these extreme MAGA Republicans are a threat to our democracy. And the oligarchy that they're bringing in is a threat to our democracy. And it's like, bro, do you not hear the words that are coming out of your mouth? Do you not see how your supporters or because I wouldn't even say that. I'm not going to say that the progressive left is necessarily a supporter of Biden or even a supporter of the Democrat establishment. The problem here is that they are the most progressive and the furthest left. And currently, because the Democrat Party has no leadership, it is being pulled to the left. And the fact that you have a bunch of more centrist established Democrats that are not vocally out there telling people to cut it out is a problem. And so that is why when people were starting to make comparisons of like left versus right and who's going to be more of a threat and who's going to be more of a concern, like I absolutely acknowledge that the right especially has a word problem, as in like saying crazy things. You know what I mean? Even our president says kind of like crazy things, you know, not horrible things, but he just like talks off the cuff and is not particularly disciplined with his speech. And then you have like the left being like, we need to control these people's speech because it could be dangerous. Yeah. While at the same time, you have people on the left who are like advocating for it could be justifiable to assassinate someone because we just don't like their speech. What?
It's confusing. It is confusing, but it's also not surprising. I guess when I heard the statistics in this study, this always happens to me. I go, oh my gosh, that is crazy. I can't believe. I can believe it. Honestly, humans are not that complicated. And when you condition and tell people something every day for a decade, then it is truth to them. That is just repetition and perception become this reality. And then they raise children who parrot the parent, and then they adopt those ideas as well. And it's a vicious cycle.
And it's coming
been going on for a while.
It's coming from everywhere is the issue. Like you have it in a soft tone from the Democrats themselves. You know what I mean? By not speaking against it or telling people to, you know, by not telling people to cut it out. Right. Then I'm sure, you know, you have like the talking heads, Rachel Maddow, you had Joy Reid for a time. You have the freaking View who are just out there constantly telling you about how horrible they are, how they're going to kill people, how they don't care, how they lack humanity. Cause that's the other thing. Their assumption is that the other side lacks humanity, and that is why they're as horrible as they are, which if you lack humanity and you're that horrible justifies this type to think this way about someone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then on top of that, you have like the normal person conversation that it is happening on social media. Like I remember, I have seen, because you're not on the talk, but I see these conversations or these posts on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And TikTok, the algorithm, it is a fact that it pushes much more progressive activist talking points more than conservative ones. There are conservative, large conservative accounts, but they just do not compare to the other side, right? And there was a conversation that was going on for a while about how Europeans who have so much experience with authoritarianism
are
sending a warning. And like, let me send a warning to the Americans and like fill in the blank. And like, this is how it's very similar to what happened here in Europe. And we know half of these people, which are children that are making this the commentary.
They're all like 20. You know nothing.
By the way,
half of our country can't read. I guarantee you haven't read a history book. Please stop. Please stop. Our schools aren't educating children anymore. They can't read. They can't do math. And yet they're up on social media telling me about what it was like to live in, you know, the early 20th century or like what imperialism feels like. Like, get out. Get out of here. Don't know anything.
like
five minutes old, and all of a sudden have the world figured out.
And it turns into this like
just
confirmation circle. Like it takes a lot of work to not end up. Nowadays, it takes some purposeful work to not end up in that bubble. You know what I mean? Of just like the same people and not listening to other perspectives.
Well, it takes that. Well, that's why it's hard. I mean, that's why we have our subscriptions to the WAPO and New York Times. And that's why we listen to, you know, the amount of times I'm listening to a hard left podcast and they're like, well, I saw this quote on Media Matters of something that like Ben Shapiro said. And the other person's like, ugh, I could never even listen to 5 minutes of his program. And I'm like, how do you guys understand what other people think if you never listen to other people? You know, it's like it is. It's constant confirmation bias and being siloed. And you have to get out of that. But that is very typical of that type of progressive groupthink. I'm gonna blow up my Tesla that I spent $80,000 on.
Well, and it's
on.
Like the
I'm
whole thing where they're like, I'm not gonna platform that idea, or I'm not gonna platform that person, or I'm not gonna support them.
No, you just don't want to debate the idea. Nope, you don't want to debate the idea because you don't know how to argue your own side. Sorry, you either have bad ideas or bad debating skills. Either way, you need to, it's like, they will act like cutting, you know, crazy Uncle Tom out of their life is, you know, saving them
or telling them that they're a horrible person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, saving them from harm. But really, it's just so you don't have to deal with reality with the other half of the country. And you'll say it's because they have, you know, frightening ideas. But I don't think it's that. And when we're able to just cut people out, when we're able to just ignore
people who think differently
than us, I think it allows us to kind of get comfortable with the idea that some people don't matter. And if some people don't matter, violence doesn't matter.
But let me ask you this, because this is kind of like, if you are engaging with someone and like you've come to realize that there's a contingent that thinks this, that thinks that your views are so horrible that they justify possibly an assassination or punching you in the face. Like, you know, recently we saw Savannah, I forget her last name. She's a pro-life activist that's like was out on the street doing a, you know, woman on the street kind of thing. And she was engaging with someone. And this woman just literally like just punched her in the face because she didn't, she was losing her argument and she didn't like what she was hearing. Right. But then you have a bunch of people defending that person as in like,
I heard
Savannah was
pro-abortion gal that I follow.
Yeah. Savannah was totally antagonizing her.
She's like, she said, it's so ironic that all the people that have a problem with this girl getting punched in the face, they are actually committing violence against women because they're not letting them get their abortions and they're bleeding out in parking lots. I'm like, do you hear yourself? We are committing violence. Us for enacting pro-life laws? That is some cognitive, like, that's some mental gymnastics is what I'll say that these people are having to do.
So, and that's why I'm saying, like, it's not just the issue is, and I'm just like kind of really working through this. Like, the issue isn't just the politicians. I do not believe in cutting people out or not having relationships with people based on just different ideas. But at what point do you get where it's like either they agree with this mindset or they think you're a horrible person because of your views and that you're contributing to the existential crisis that they're imagining and living through? Like, at what point do you go and say, okay, well, I guess I'm out? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
but that's for a different reason. Like, to me, I mean, it would take a lot for me to cut people out of my life. And them thinking that, you know, I support a genocidal maniac and I should be punched in the face or unalived, that's the part where I go, maybe I'm not comfortable in this relationship anymore. But I think that's the difference, is
that it's not based on politics.
And a lot of people I speak to, I and a lot of people I speak to over the last 5 years who lost family members, who haven't spoke with their sister or brother or their parents for years now, they haven't attended a wedding or they haven't been invited to Christmases because people predominantly on the left cut them out. That was, it was so fierce and it was so quick on the heels of like a discussion where someone shared some conservative views. That is a far cry from me deciding for my own safety or for my kids' safety or for our family
or just mental health in general,
our life, because it's a mental health issue. The two are not the same. And at that point, you definitely should probably take a break from that person or cut them out of, you know, your daily activities or family gatherings for a time for them to go get help if they actually are thinking those things. But that is not what, that is not why any conservative has voiced so far to me.
It's like, it's not based on politics, and it's not, I hate to say this, but it's like, you know, you didn't start it, you know, like you were just trying to live your life, share your opinion,
right.
I don't know, free speech, that sort of thing. Something that you said or maybe over
I'm
the
telling
time.
You, the most benign things I have said have ended a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not because of the thing I said, because the thing I said was innocuous. It was because it is perceived that I am a conservative. Therefore, I believe or adhere to or
some of the
propagate
worst
these
ideas. Yeah. Some of the worst possible
ideas that they feel are dangerous to them as humans. And it all goes back to programming. They've been programmed to think this. They can't always identify even why they think it or give examples of why they think it. It's just the programming.
My
the
favorite is when
so heavy.
And I've heard this before. My favorite is when, like, well, everybody says or everybody thinks. Well, everybody. And I'm just kind of like,
who? Document it. Tell me. Show me the study. Because I've got a study right here that said that 50% of these people think it's okay to assassinate the president. That's actual data. So.
Oh,
it's crazy.
It's a crazy
world out there.
It's
wild. I mean,
wild.
I'm going to the zoos in D.C. today. These people are going to be amongst me looking at the reptile exhibit.
Why do you think I
world
live
out there?
I live in the state of Tennessee where it's...
there's no crazy people there. That's why I want to go
there's crazy
somewhere,
people.
My husband, there...
But everybody here is also armed.
Not as many
addition.
As in D.C.
Yes.
Which surprisingly makes me feel better these days, quite
absolutely.
Honestly.
It's so funny. There, I was watching this video of these. It was two people from the UK had come to the United States to do a vacation or whatever. And, you know, there is some ice. I love seeing these videos of Europeans or people from the UK or whatever when they come to the States to visit. And then they give like all of these things about like how different it is or things that they're shocked about. Mm-hmm. And the firearms and stuff, you know, guns is definitely one of those things. And especially people being asked, like, did you feel safe in the U.S.? And it's funny to me. They're like, most people are like, yeah, I feel completely safe. Everybody's like super nice. And it's like, it is kind of wild to think that like anybody could be carrying a gun. And I guess when you initially get there, you get a little nervous about it. But like, people are just like normal people. And they just, I don't know, happen to have a gun.
Well,
and
like, we lived almost our whole lives in California where nobody had guns where we live, no one. And if they did, it was probably illegal ownership. And Def certainly didn't open carry. Like, it's just that never. Are you kidding? So when we moved here and we have access to all the different states, we're, you know, driving around. We can be in four different states within an hour in where we are. It's very centralized. And it's still wild to me. I'll still be at a coffee shop and someone will just roll in. Holster on the side, no big deal. I'm like, what's going on? What is there an emergency? I've
like,
been informed of nothing. Where are my children? Nope, just an average Wednesday morning.
There's this Waffle House that my husband and I go to sometimes for breakfast. And yes, I love Waffle House. I know that, you know, that can be a divisive topic, but I absolutely love Waffle House. So anyways, he is an older gentleman, well into his 60s, probably close to 70. Wears a big...
Oh, I thought you were talking about Obed.
No.
You're talking about your husband. I'm like, he is. He looks great.
No. I'm talking about, like, we go to this breakfast place, and this man, he comes regularly around the same time that we usually go to breakfast, and he sits at the counter, and he walks in with this giant cowboy hat. He has a humongous, like, gun on... I'm pretty sure it might be a revolver. I'm not sure, but he has it strapped on, open carry.
Excellent. I love
carrying
it.
Carrying a tiny little chihuahua. And he sits...
What?
I And he sits at the counter and everybody's very, because he's a regular. And my guess is that, you know, he sits at the counter and he eats his breakfast while holding his little chihuahua with one arm, feeding the chihuahua little bits of pancake or waffle. And
oh, my gosh. I need his giant hat immediately.
And his.
Are you going today? Go today. No. Go today to Waffle House. Take a picture. And then I need to know the dog's name. You have to just go up one day and be like, I got to know the dog's name.
You want me to talk to a stranger?
Yes. He's bringing a chihuahua to share pancakes with. I'm sure he's nice. Like, just, I would talk to him. I would go up and be like, I have observed you for many weeks and I must know what the name of the dog is.
It's so funny.
Too. I'd like to know his name.
Because, you know, other cultures and stuff like that just think like the gun itself is just such a violent, you know, thing. And then like, it's just a normal
baby chihuahua.
Responsible, you know, and you have this old man with his cowboy hat and his gun on his hip with this tiny little chihuahua coming to the Waffle House to eat.
God bless America.
I know.
I love it.
It's like quintessential Americana. Like, I love this.
Best nation on earth.
All right. So we're going to wrap up.
We have like
questions.
15 minutes.
Yeah. So,
yes. Okay.
Let's go.
We can't get too in the weeds with any of these.
I know.
Leftover questions from some of our friends. Okay. Crystal asks, if you had to choose one outfit to wear for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I mean, sweatpants and a sweatshirt, hands down. I don't know. What do you mean by outfit? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know.
If it was
if
an
you have,
outfit,
like a specific favorite.
Do you know what I mean? Where I had to be seen in public, I would just wear wide leg jeans with like a nice kind of like I am not a fancy person. Okay. I'm like jeans, sweatshirt, boots, or tennis shoes. I am not, and now I am capable of being fancy. Like, I've been to special events, I've been to galas, I'm very comfortable in high heels. You know what I mean? Like, all that kind of stuff. But my default, like, I can tell you, I don't like leggings particularly too much. I don't like stuff that's too close to my skin. Yeah. I like stuff that is loose.
Yeah.
I don't like, don't touch me. Don't like even my clothes. I don't want people touching me. I don't.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even
Mercedes
want my
coming
clothes.
To a retreat. No. This is going to be wild. Mercedes coming to a retreat. I'm hosting in May.
You have no idea.
There's going to be people there who are going to want to hug you. They're going to want to hug you. They're going to want to talk to you. There might be crying. They're going to talk about their feelings. This is going to be just like, you're going to need a month off after
so
you get
funny.
Back. From
you know,
this
like
thing.
My closest girlfriends, like our inside joke, I would say out of my little chat, you know, group friend, there's like four of us. I am the most like not feeling person. Like, they share all these feelings. And I'm like, I'm the friend that goes, that's nice. With like my arm extended.
That's nice.
Tapping you on the back. I don't know what to do.
That's my oldest daughter. Actually, I think you guys are going to get along really well. She'll be there. Because the minute that any of the other siblings or me start to have like elevated emotions or even tear up, you'll all of a sudden just see her like disappear and go downstairs. Like, she's just like, I am not needed here. You guys are going to get along great. Okay. Okay.
What about you? What's your outfit?
Rapid fire. I mean, I just don't like...
Yeah,
I don't
same
know.
Thing.
I don't
it's
really
like...
care. I don't even think about it.
We're so high maintenance.
I love clothes. Like, I love feeling, you know, well put together.
I love
That's
furniture.
That's a definite thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So if you could wear an armchair. Okay. Out of all the books you have read, fiction, nonfiction, or both, what is your go-to recommendation, regardless of the person's background, as a must-read book? Off the top of your head.
I would say the one book for me that did something for me. Do you know what I mean? It's in English, it's like When I Was Puerto Rican. Cuando yo era Puerto Rican. Yeah. Which is, it is about the story of a young girl who lives in Puerto Rico, very poor. It was back in the day. Like, I think she was like in a shack in the Malangas, like living. And she ends up back in New York in the Bronx and becomes like very successful, and just kind of like her story as a Puerto Rican that was very poor and then like made it to the United States. And just the culture.
What's it called again?
It's when I was, I think in English it would be When I Was Puerto Rican. And I think it's When I Was Puerto Rican, which I think really spoke a lot to me, because even though I wasn't born on the island, but I was like first generation of my entire family born in the States, but we flew back and forth a lot. Mm-hmm. And in my home, it was like, you know, it was Puerto Rico in my home. And this book in particular kind of talks about the challenge of like being from, it's a really interesting dynamic to be from a country that has its own identity, but still have a foot in the United States and being an American. It's like you have these two split personalities, especially when, you know, the relationship between the two is not the best. You know what I mean? And so like, if you are a person that grew up in one over the other, they're like this weird automatic, like almost division kind of forms, or like conflict. I don't want to say division, but like a conflict.
Okay.
So like for myself, and this book kind of talked about, you know, trying to maintain those roots when they ended up back in the States.
Yeah.
So it's like a reminder of like when I was Puerto Rican, because she just kind of doesn't feel she is as much because now she's more separated from that time. And I go through a lot of that, especially since I grew up more in the States than on the island. And then I look the way I do and I don't have an accent. And so it's like you're always feeling like you have to justify or defend that, you know, no, actually, I am Puerto Rican. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, so for me, that book. But that was like very personal for me, you know, and not everybody can necessarily relate to that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my book.
Identify. I would say the book I recommend all the time to just two. I have two of them that to just about everybody all the time is Hannah Coulter by Wendell Berry. I think everybody should read that book. I think it's
Tell me about it.
I'm not going to spoil anything for you. So just go out and buy it. I'm not. You should read it. Read it. You will not. It might even make your cold, dead heart cry just a little bit. You're going to love it.
My cold, dead heart. That was harsh.
Like, give me like this over here. And then the second book that I tell everybody to read, and not just at Christmas time, is Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. I love it.
Yeah.
I love Charles Dickens, but I love that book. The book is so important. I love it. So those are
I can tell you the worst book I ever read.
What?
The Reluctant, oh my gosh, was it The Reluctant Wife or something? It was horrible. It was a horrible, horrible book. And it was one of these books that I tried to push my way through. And I was like, it has to get better. There were points in the book that I could actually turn multiple pages because there was just like, there were parts of it that were, didn't add to the story. Like I literally could turn two or three pages and still, like it was horrible. Don't ever
and
read
not
that book.
Miss a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We only have a few minutes. So speaking about Puerto Rico quickly, Ruby wants to know your thoughts on the age-old debate of Puerto Rico becoming a state.
Okay, so let me see if I can do this quickly. So the way we are divided here in political parties, a Republican versus Democrat, is very different to what is happening, what Puerto Rico is. So in Puerto Rico, the parties are more divided by the status. So it's independent, associated liberated state, which is the PNP, which is basically to stay as we are. And the other one is statehood. There are like one or two other parties that are starting to grow that have like more social issues. But I would say that even those parties would probably lean more towards independence. For the longest time, I have probably said, we just want to stay the way we are. I do not want Puerto Rico to become a state. I don't want it to become a state for multiple reasons, not only, and it's not even political, right? So yes, there are political reasons why I would not want it to become a state in regards to, you know, obviously if we got two senators, it would lean, they would lean Democrat. Like all of these three parties that are, you know, their positions are basically founded in the status of the island. I would say they're all mainly Democrat. Like, there's not really, like, a true Republican party, even though the PNP, which is the Associated Liberated State, and even the statehood party is probably seen as being Republican, especially the statehood one. It's not. Okay. I mean, they'll support the Republican party here in the United States, but foundationally, their politics is not Republican. And you can have different types within the same party. So they might both support statehood, but one is definitely more Democrat or progressive than the other or something like that. You know what I mean? So, but I do not want it to become a state because I am very protective of the people and the culture of the island. And my primary concern is that if it were to become a state, I mean, I don't want to like diss Hawaii or anything like that, but what would, you know, we already have kind of like, I hate to say like a threat to our culture on the island, you know, because Americans can come to the island and we are very Americanized because we have access to the United States, but we're still very much Puerto Rican. And, you know, my concern is that if we were to become a state, you know, a lot of things would change. And I think that over time, it would be a detriment to the culture of the island. So for like those selfish reasons, I don't necessarily want it to become a state. And if I had to choose one over the other, like if it had to be statehood or had to be independence, I know it's a great risk, but I would probably choose independence for the island over statehood. So, which probably would shock a lot of people, but yeah, I think it would be awesome if the island, you know, had an opportunity to stand on its own two feet. Like it's always been a colony. It's always been owned by someone else. You know, it got taken over by the Spaniards for hundreds of years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the United States, like we've just never been on our own. So I know that's a huge risk. You know what I mean? Because we have neighbors that haven't done so great, you know, but my hope is that our history and our influence from the United States still remains in some way. And that gives us a leg up to be more independent. I don't know if that's the case, but that's my hope. So
good answer.
Those are my thoughts.
Did it. That was a very quick, that's good. All right.
I think we've run out of time. That so many
we'll
times.
Take some more. I bet.
I get asked that all the time.
Are you kidding? Yeah.
That's so how do you feel about Puerto Rico question. Becoming independent or a state? No,
that is one thing I don't have a very, very strong opinion. I mean, I don't want them to become a state, but other than that, I couldn't argue why or why not they should go independent. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have not visited. You are my first Puerto Rican friend.
We need to go.
I know.
It is the most, it's going through some rough times right now, but it's literally one of the most beautiful places. Of course, it's my home, but I just think it's like, the food is so good. The people are so awesome. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful little island that needs a little help.
Oh, I love that. Thoughts and prayers.
So, all right, I guess that's it. We are done with today's episode of Unfiltered. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this, tell a friend and tell them, man, you got to sign up and become a paying supporter of Rivera and Reeves so you can listen to these very fun, engaging, and informative Unfiltered episodes. All right? Is there anything else that I'm missing? Anything? Any thoughts?
No, I'm going to the zoo. I'm going to see some pandas.
I'm
going to
go plant some tomatoes. And then clean my house. Very exciting stuff.
Oh, I can't wait. This is when you start like getting like your peaches. Remember last year you made or you had
so the blooms
that,
already.
And then you would make like pasta sauce. Oh, I like watching your stories.
So I will actually, by the way, for all of you exclusive listeners, Rachel and I each have our own little separate Substack, and I'm going to be actually doing a little bit more on my Substack, and I'm going to be including here shortly like a Mercedes Kitchen corner. So not only do you get some political commentary, but also I'm going to be sharing just fundamental basics on some cooking because I do have a culinary background. So you might want to like sign up for that and check it out. So especially with the season.
Nice.
So, all right, we're done. That's it. It's over. Okay. Goodbye. Bye.
Adios.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.